a game like yesterday's where a Twitter account like Old Takes Exposed thrives, right? Because
oh, they're just licking their chops.
Stewie tried to sewer me, and he tagged me in a tweet, and I was like, no. You're not going to catch me, buddy. I'm a veteran of this game, all right? I didn't throw out anything regrettable early in that game. Didn't have any whats. It takes waited because it was still 2-0, right? It was still a hockey game. Mm-hmm. But I am one to fire texts to friends of the salacious variety, of the hot taker variety. And our next guest may have received some of those and is now. The thing about texting with me, Chris, is that you actually sign a virtual NDA. You're not allowed to expose anything that was put in the text messages. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's 2-time Stanley Cup champion, founder and CEO of the Clever app, which is excellent. Christopher Stieg, good morning.
Yeah, I saw that. Was it in vanish mode now? All your text messages, especially during first periods.
You okay? Here's the thing, though. You're a Western Canadian guy, and you know that. Just to tell the truth, that seeing people like me who care about the Leafs struggle, you loved it. It was your joy. Like you're sending me just those open-ended question texts, like 91 thoughts. ... Like you know what the thoughts are.
Baiting him.
Oh yeah, like you. You want, I know, and when I sent you the responses that I gave you, I know you were cackling and you were having a time with it. Like, that's what feeds the West, is people think that it's like food, but it's not. It's actually the misery of Leaf fans.
No, I go through, like, my Rolodex of people from Toronto, so it's like my wife's brother, her dad, and you know, it's just to see your reaction. So I was happy that they brought it back just for your own sanity last night.
Yeah. Well, dude, I didn't want to have to do the no showed again show because I've done that many times. I've done that show and I hate that show. It was just nice to actually have one where listen, the first half of that game, and I was talking about this with Kipper earlier, is like how you evaluate this, because part of you can look at it and go, well, they still have to prove that they can play a full 60 and blah, 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 blah. But part of me actually has been thinking maybe this is the best way for this to have happened, where you were down, that everybody counted you out. You had all the ghosts and all the demons built up on your shoulders midway through the second period, but you overcame it and you beat the Stanley Cup champs. Like, where are you at with just, like, the amount of credit you should give that team for winning that way?
I think you got to give them a ton of credit. You look first, at the end of the first period, everyone was talking about Jack Campbell. He already let in two. And then Kevin Bieksa stood up and said, well, if it wasn't for Jack Campbell, it would have been 4-5-0. He made some incredible saves. Braden Point, he made two other 10-bellers right on Stamkos. So I look at him as the guy who held them in. The biggest person who needs confidence and who rides the confidence wave more than anyone is Jack Campbell. When he's not ready to go or when he's not confident, the team's going to struggle. So the best part about last night was going down 2-0, him needing to make the saves he needed to make. He made them. Brought his team back into the game, gave him a chance to get back in into the second period, third period, and then win a game. So that the biggest guy for me last night is for him, because if they're going to win a Stanley Cup, or if they're going to go in 2 or 3 rounds, he's going to have to be the guy, and he's going to have to be confident and not just keep going through the roller coasters of emotions. And it seems like he does.
Dude, I felt the same way. And like we talked a lot about Jack battling after he got pulled in the Tampa game, going, he wanted to battle with his teammates. He wanted to stay out there and battle with his teammates. And I went, buddy, you already had that chance. You let in 5 goals. Go sit on the bench, say 2 for the evening. That was really battling. That was battling. Was him staying in that net and just being, like, every part of his body he made saves with, right? Like, it was low pad kick saves. It was desperation shoulder stuff. Like, he used the glove. He was using the blocker. Everything was at his disposal. It was desperate hockey. And I loved seeing it from Jack. And I really do believe that what you said is true in terms of, hey, okay, well, what is going to change with players? Who's actually going to have something that they can build off of? To me, it's Jack Campbell knowing that he can let in a bad goal and it's not going to break him and be the end of the world. And it's Austin Matthews engaging in physical play and going, oh, right, I don't just need to be a goal scorer to be, or a guy that strips pucks off of people to be the best player on the planet or an impactful player in a series.
Well, there's him and Nylander, and those are the two that you probably have to talk about the most today. Matthews comes into the corner and lays Sergachev out. Third period as well, there's a hit that he made in the third period that obviously in the regular season he never makes, so he was impactful. William Nylander was the guy driving the boat, though, from the offense, from the start of the game. He was taking the pucks in the net. There was a period, or there was a play in the second period. I think he stripped Chernak or McDonough. I can't remember, in the corner. And there was those, yeah, one of those plays where he would take the puck behind the net and then go to the, you know, he'd always basically hang out on the perimeter and make the pass probably to the weak side D. He drove it across the net. He got hit. And those are plays that tell me that Will hammered. Yeah. And then he hit the post. I think Kyle Foote hit him. So these are plays that tell you that he is engaged in the game. He was the guy last night. Yeah, Matthews scored the winner. Marner, to me, still was quiet. He wasn't overall engaged, and I thought he was good. I didn't think he was great. I know he had a great play, and that's all that they need from him. They needed a great play from him at a great moment, and they got it at the end of the third period with that basically a shot pass on net to Matthews. But Nylander was the guy. He was the guy moving his feet. He was taking pucks to the net. On that 4-on-4 goal, he's the one who created all that space for John Tavares to get that space in the corner to basically shake off Chernak. So I loved how Nylander played, and he put the, I thought he actually put the team on his back when he needed to, and he's the guy who got them back in the game.
I'm glad you brought him up, because he's definitely the guy that's sort of not getting as much credit today, especially, like, it was funny because it was whipping boy night, right? Like, William Nylander got killed on social media for that play that he didn't engage in the corner against Tampa Bay and the way that he played and on the road. Justin Hall got called the worst defenseman on the team by a media member.
Who called him that? That was crazy.
Yeah, it was a tough move to do.
Probably
that.
Simmons again, wasn't it?
Correct. yeah, correct. That was it's not the hardest guess to guess that, but yes,
no.
You are correct.
What a pass though by Hall on that fourth goal.
Dude, what a good game by
third
Hall.
Goal, like, he was great.
He was solid. He was really solid. But Nylander, I want to stick with for a second, because we probably haven't talked about him enough today. He got roasted in that game, and when he took that penalty, like, early in the game, I went, okay, you know, I was in the, if hockey had a trade machine, I would have been operating it for like the rest of that period, going, oh, like, I wonder what you could get back for William Nylander. He was great. I wonder what you think it is with him, though, where I mentioned, I didn't even fault Tavares as much, because I think Tavares has physical limitations now that are different with Nylander, but it's like, what do you look for with him where it just looks so different when he's engaged versus when he's not? Like, what's the number one sign for you of a guy that carries the offense versus the guy that, yeah, we pasted for 24 hours after Monday's game or Sunday?
I think you could look at him off faceoffs. Does he want to engage in a battle off of faceoff? And if guys, you know, skilled guys, if they're getting into it, if they're jumping off pucks, so basically when the pucks drop, if the guy's just standing there and he's letting the other guy go in, that tells me they're not engaged. And if you watch William Nylander off faceoffs when he's not engaged, it's basically like he's going in there like old style Alexei Kovalev, just standing there, and wherever the puck bounces, it goes, and then he reacts. Last night, I thought from the start, he was engaging in a little bit of a battle, a 50-50 battle off the faceoff. That, to me, tells me he's in the game and he's ready to go. And then also taking pucks to the net. You never see William Nylander take pucks to the net like that, or even Mitch Marner at times. And I think that's what Mitch can do better as well. If he's watching what made William successful last night, it is plays like that. And those are plays that you're going to need to make and sacrifice yourself in order to win games as the playoffs go on and on. So those two key pieces for me for William, but the faceoffs is a big part. And I remember even myself, I never had William's skill, but also being a skill player, coaches always want you to battle off the faceoff, and you're like, why? And it's more about just making sure your brain's turned on and that you're ready to go, rather than just sleeping and hoping the puck bounces your way and then you can whack it back. Those are plays that you can really tell if a player's engaged in the game.
Curious if you buy this narrative that we've been talking about today, that the game script of having to come back and prove yourself that wasn't going to be a massive collapse actually helps the Leafs going into game 6 and gives them a little bit of momentum and a bit of an edge over the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I think it gives them confidence. We talked about it, I think, before game 1 and game 2, that you can't, you know, there's no wave that you ride from one to the next game. And we actually saw that, you know, what happens between game and 1, game 2. So I think as a player like William Nylander and Jack Campbell, it gives them confidence. You know, it's just like a player who hasn't scored for 10 games and he gets an empty netter goal and then all of a sudden he scores for the next 4 or 5. It can give certain players confidence that bring you into the next game that maybe they didn't have it in the prior. So that's something I think that it can give them. it's something that it showed them that they can come back against a really good team, especially when they're playing the right way and everyone's really willing to buy in. So I think that's the biggest thing it can do, is it can give a couple guys a shot of confidence.
I hope so too, and I hope that Nylander continues to show it. And it's not like he hasn't strung great games together, because last year against Montreal, he was their best player, right? And
yeah,
he maintained that throughout the postseason. So it's proven that he can be a big game player. I'm just always reluctant to go with a, like, he's finally learned take, because I've done that with him before, and I look like an ass, because, like, I joked about this earlier, but every time you go with the Nylander take of, oh, he's bad, he goes great. Like, it's almost the best thing for the Leafs that he had that horrific game in game five, because in game four, because this is just kind of the method with him, is like, and Keefe has talked about it past, like, openly, how he's the guy that's just needs the stick more than the carrot than anybody on the team. Like, the stick just works with this guy. When they show him those plays where he dogs it and they have it on film and everybody has it, it does seem to unlock something different in him. So I'm curious about what you didn't like about Marner's game, though, or what you think can improve there, because to me, it was like he was just so noticeable start to finish. Like, he was actually my guy where I went, okay, like, his consistency level was the same from the beginning as it was in the end.
Yeah, so I didn't think he was great, and I had this talk last night with a buddy of mine, because I just didn't think he was great with the puck. I didn't think on the power play he was great with the puck. I thought he was a little too active, and I know he always wants to stand on his onside, and they finally got him onto his offside when actually Nylander got the puck on his onside on that one goal, but I thought he was a little too, you know, his feet were going a little too everywhere with the puck. He was forcing plays. I just didn't think that he was, I didn't feel like he was comfortable. When he's comfortable, he's making those nice little plays. And I would like to see him again get a little more engaged, taking the puck to the net or getting into the, you know, so kind of undercutting the defense to not so much worry about being on the perimeter of the ice. So again, I didn't think he played bad. And Mitch Marner never really plays that bad, besides last year in Montreal for a couple of games where we'd never seen him play like that. But for me, I think he can still take his game to another level. He can get a little more engaged, take pucks a little bit more than that, and undercut the D. So it's like when you're coming out from the corner, and you pass it up to the D, a lot of the times he'll just follow his pass. And if you watch him, he follows his pass because he's staying in an area where he can get the puck back. I'd like to see him jump underneath that D-man and get to an area, because if you're going to score in the playoffs, you're going to have to jump to those areas and get there consistently. So those are plays like we talked about last year. He can keep doing the same things and he may keep getting the same results, but if he's going to keep continually getting better, especially in the playoffs, you're going to have to do different things in the game to get better and better. And I think he can do more of that. Again, he wasn't bad. I just didn't think he was great. And if they're going to win a Stanley Cup or keep winning rounds, Mitch Marner is going to need to be great.
I mean, yeah, it's a kind of a great problem to have, but you're laying out that he can be better and he can control the play even more. And I would love to see it. And I guess my question for you is, what needs to be their recipe for success going into game six? Is it Mitch Marner raising his level? Is that the major driving factor if they're going to get a win?
Well, Jack Campbell. They need saves from Jack Campbell, and they need him early on in the game, because Tampa Bay, they're a different animal at home. And I know playing against Tampa Bay in the past, if they score one, they score two. Obviously, you could see in the previous game, they're going to score five. Nikita Kucherov, these guys love playing at home, and they'll just keep scoring. So he needs to be big, especially early on. He's going to face a big wave in the first 10 minutes. Tampa Bay throws everything at them. They come two guys hard on the forecheck. They slam the D-man down the wall, and they really put a lot of pressure on you early on in the game. So Jack Campbell is going to need to hold tight. They're going to need their defense moving pucks out of the zone, and everyone's going to need to step up and play a big game six. These elimination games are really hard. You can let in a goal early on, and all of a sudden, psychologically, you're like, oh, we're going to lose the series. The series is over, you know? So how do they stay mentally stable if they're down one or two goals? How do they stay with it? How do they not beat themselves up? Because Tampa Bay, No matter what you say, some of their guys, they could go down one or two nothing. They're not going to worry. They're going to keep playing the same way. Now, a team like Toronto hasn't been there. How do they handle that? And they can handle that. They have a lot of players that can do that. But that's going to be the difference in the game, the goaltending and how they handle the pressure.
Well, how they handle the pressure so far is that they just lean on player coach Jason Spezza. They're like, hey, tell us what to do, coach. And he goes, I'll give you the pump-up speech. I'll calm the goalie down. Like, most impactful 5 minutes in the history of hockey from Jason Spezza, apparently. Like, and I'm fully here to buy it, and I will fully be, the supporter of him getting his statue.
Free Spezza.
Yeah, freeze bets has turned out to be the case. I wonder, though, if you have a theory on the slow starts thing. Because, again, I get it. Tampa throws the kitchen sink at you, and they're a great team. But this has been one of the themes of the series, and it's actually been one of the themes for the Maple Leafs going back. And I don't know what it is, because people have had theories like, well, they're starting the wrong guys on the ice. And I go, okay, fine. And then they don't. They go with their stars to start yesterday's game. Like, it seems like it's... It doesn't really seem to matter who gets the first shift. It seems to be always the first 10 minutes of the game that Tampa has a lot of control.
Yeah, I actually bring it back to systems and structure. I think a lot of the way that they start the game, if they're not starting with two guys on a forecheck, or they're not starting the way Tampa Bay does, they hammer the D-men down the wall. They put a lot of pressure on you in the first 10 minutes. I think when you're forechecking one guy, And you're so much worried about not getting scored on, especially early on in the game, it puts you back on your heels. And so Tampa Bay comes out, they come at you hard. They have guys coming at you with pace from the first drop of the puck. Toronto likes to start generally with a one and a half man forecheck. Doesn't get their forwards engaged. Sometimes takes a little longer for you to get your feet moving and get into the game. And then also you're all worried about getting all four lines into the game. So if you're not skating, worried about getting all four lines into the game, and they're not fully into it, takes 10, 20 minutes, and then all of a sudden you're down 1, 2, nothing. So I think they need to change a little bit of their structure. That's the biggest thing that could let them play. Maybe not let them think so much, especially on a two-man forecheck. It's just skate, 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 keep going. Sometimes you're going to give up an odd man rush. That's not ideal, but that's just something that allows players to get into the game faster. And that's the biggest piece I look at is their structure.
Again, we're talking to Christopher Stieg, two-time Stanley Cup champ, and founder and CEO of the Clever app, which is for coaches. And you can tell, like talking to you now, that you're full coach brain all the time now. And so we kind of lose, like somebody like me can't tell anything about what you just talked about. That's why I ask you the question. Well, how we evaluate so much the coaches in a series is who says what, and how it works out off of what they say, and what lineup decisions they make. Keith stuck with Hall. He stuck with Spezza. How much credit are you giving him for that win?
You know what? I'm giving him credit for the win. He obviously did the right things. He made the right moves. I was questioning during the game whether he should put Nylander with Matthews, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Marner goes out and scores. So I'm like, well, maybe he is the right coach, right? Or maybe he is doing the right thing. But I just see little tweaks during the game that he could make. Like if Nylander is flying and driving the net and he's controlling the puck and he set up a ton of plays, those are little things that I look for in Keith. You know, whether it is a little bit of a structure change at times and a lineup tweak, not so much, hey, who's coming in the lineup and who's coming out. They have enough guys in the lineup that can get the job done. But it's who's in the lineup that can elevate another guy in the lineup's game at that significant moment in time. So I was questioning him again in that sense, especially when the game was down and I could see that one guy was going and one guy wasn't at the level he normally is at. But then, hey, he leaves them together and he ends up scoring. It ends up working out at the end of the game. But he's I give him a lot of credit. He's done a heck of a job with a really good team. And to get to this point in a season is not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to manage all these personalities. You have different people. And that's what the biggest thing of a coach is. You know, some people you can yell at, some you can't, and some you have to, you know, coddle and teach. So it's just he's managing a lot of personalities, and he's obviously done an incredible job.
Dude, you mentioned the exit during that first intermission. That was actually the most fascinating part to me. It was not the Jack Campbell component. It was everyone on the panel debating what you say to those guys during the first intermission.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. What a horrific spot for Keith to be in, though, too, because like we saw through the 24/7 series or whatever the version of that was with Amazon. Like he tried pushing the buttons. He's tried to be stern dad. He's tried to be cool dad. Like he's tried to do all these different things. And I kind of felt for him after the first 20 because I went, man, what's this guy supposed to say to these guys at this point? You know what I mean? Like who cares what he says? And I guess it worked out for Spezza and they turned it around, so we got the narratives. But boy, oh boy. So yeah, I mentioned Hall. To me, it looks like they've got the right blue line now. Like they've just got it figured out. This is going to be the guys for the rest of the or if they're healthy the rest of the way. But I'm curious what your thoughts were on just that group's play in this game.
I thought they were great, and I really like that Brody Muzzin combo. I think they do a really good job, you know, Muzzin being physical, Brody moving the puck well. I think you could still get more ice for Giordano somehow. He's in and around 17 to 18 minutes. I think you can get his ice time up. Here's the one thing actually I was questioning at the end of the game is just who they have on at the end of the game. Obviously, they trust Hall in the final situation, but to not have a guy, you know, like Morgan Riley or Labushkin, I think those two guys, you know, they went with the Muzzin, Brody, which they need to be on at the end of the game, those two, and then Giordano, and then I would have Gio either with Riley or Labushkin. But again, Hall stepped up at the end of the game. He chipped the puck up out the boards, yep. and it got out. I think that was his big play and his big moment to basically say, hey, Simmons, shut your yap, you know? So Hall showed up. They all showed up. They played really well. And after, you know, especially after that first, you know, 12 minutes, they were closing time and space, taking it away, making the good pass out, getting it to their forwards. How many times did you see the puck get to Nylander, Nylander get the zone, and the fourth guy come in and get that pass for that third man high shot off the rush? Like, these guys were all over the ice. They were doing a great job, and well done by all of them. And I was really proud for Justin Hall, especially after taking crap from that guy.
100%. And Giordano, like, they made that adjustment, right, where they end up putting him on the top power play unit. And I went, this is such a weird in-game adjustment for them to make at this point of the year. But yeah. I thought that he was, like, aggressive, looking for his offense. Like, he took some shots. He was physical. He had a classic Mark Giordano game where I went, oh, man, this guy's just a stud. What a pickup for them. Didn't look slow at all. But the Hall thing, I got a spin for him. I will just say, Steve Simmons did him the biggest favor ever doing that, because everybody was on Justin Hall's back and it made him a sympathetic figure, and all of a sudden everybody in the universe was rallying around him going, come on, Justin Hall, do this. And if they win, and I mean, if they move forward and they somehow like win a Stanley Cup or something along those lines happen, I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, but he needs to show up with Leafs worst defenseman t-shirt like day one. That's just like day one stuff. Justin Hall, I'll help you print them. I'll help you get this done, but I'm telling you, it'll be the number one. It's like the shirt, what's his number one bull, like that's your version of this, buddy. Like, he did you a massive marketing favor. Your PR shift, the Justin Hall fan stock, he went from number one whipping boy in the market to like guy everyone is pulling for now, and everyone's saying, I also thought Justin Hall should stay in the lineup. It's incredible. I've never seen a shift like this from one game to the next.
Hey, yeah, it'll be Justin Hall, worst defenseman, sponsored by Clever, of course, right?
Yeah, of course.
To put that in there.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, if like, you get called the worst defenseman on your team, download and install the Clever app, and you can become a key figure in a first-round playoff series victory.
Yeah, we can't top that.
I think you're just looking at the way the question was phrased. You can say Justin Hall, you know, like he was the worst defenseman last night, but holy. Good for Justin Hall. Yeah. Hey, here's the other thing. Maybe last question for me to you. Why can't D-men play more than 18 to 20 minutes now? Is there something like that, you know, only one D-man can play 24, 25? That was one thing I look at as well. I think you can get some of those guys up a little more.
You definitely can, because I'm pretty sure Hedman played 27 minutes and never slowed down.
Yeah,
like he's a freak, and there's like I would imagine that on your app and when you're breaking down film, it must, if you were John Cooper, the joy of your life must be just breaking down Hedman film, right? Like, there's just no way.
Incredible.
It's unbelievable. Like, over and over and over again, you just watch him and go, I cannot believe this human exists. Like, he's so good. He's so good at hockey. So, yeah, you can play that guy 27 minutes. I don't know. I haven't minded the Leafs deployment. You just, what, you're looking for a little bit more from Riley or some? Who are you looking for more from?
Yeah, I look more from Gio, you know, and Brody and Muzzin at times. They get around 20, but I think if you're really, like, leaning on these guys, I think you can get up to about 22, 23 at a consistent. You have a real good top four. And I know you're not playing Riley with Giordano, but you have to play them in certain moments to get their minutes up. But whether it's put them on together in the offensive zone, do other creative things to get them out there. But these D-men, they can play more than 18 minutes, 19 minutes. And I think if you're in a series and you're going into a game six now, you got to rely on your horses. That's why it was a question for me, is I think you can get them up a couple more minutes, which gets them in the game a bit more.
Yeah, and it's a little tough because, you know, Labushkin's already only playing 14 minutes. How low can you knock that down to get other guys more minutes? But one thing I wanted to ask you, Chris, about Giordano and one path he has to more playing time is he got a couple looks on that first power play unit in Riley's spot yesterday. What did you think of that move, and how did you think he's looked on the power play throughout the series?
Yeah, I like the move. I think what he brings is he brings this snapshot that somehow finds its way through every single time. So he can find lanes. He doesn't walk the line as good as Riley, but what he does is he creates good passing lanes from up top. So he pushes in. If you watch Victor Hedman, he pushes in and he gives good angles to his guys for one-timers. I think that's something that Riley could be a lot better at, is where to pass the puck to on the ice, on the top, to his guys on the side flanks to give them more time and space. And I think that's what Gio does really well, is puck distribution up top and where to do it. Again, he's not fleet of foot, and he's not going to do it the same way Riley can with his feet, but I think he just brings a different element there. He brings a better one-time presence as well. He does. He can really hammer the puck.
Yeah, the shot is clearly heavy. And listen, I'm just a dumbo who doesn't know these things. But I will say that every once in a while, the thing I'll question about Morgan Riley on the power play is, because he's surrounded by so much talent, it feels like there are times where he can actually walk down and take a shot and passes it up. And, like, it's the gift and the curse of having Austin Matthews there, right? It's like you're always like, oh, I should give the puck to Matthews. But there are times where it's like, no, they're taking him away and they're daring you to shoot. And I wouldn't mind it if you just walked down and took a shot. And I thought Giordano changed that dynamic a little bit in that game, and that it
he
put
does
a little
have
bit
that
more pressure. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. He does have that. He obviously will give it to the guy who needs to have the puck, but Gio isn't scared. He's not afraid to shoot it. He'll take that.
Yeah. Christopher Stieg, also not afraid to shoot. Also, don't be afraid, if you're a head coach, to download the Clever app. It's phenomenal. Two-time Stanley Cup champ who will help you become a better coach, help your kids and your athletes perform better. Thanks for coming on, buddy. This was great.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Don't ever release those texts. This Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. The only solace I take in a game like that, or from a takes moment like that with text, is that it's kind of like your internet search history. It's like, yeah, well, we're all in this together, you know? Like, you would say, yeah, if it was ever revealed, we'd all be revealed. It's like the text messages from this. It's like, you reveal the text messages of any Leaf fan, bad text in there. Maybe you avoided it on Twitter, like me, but you didn't avoid it everywhere.
Yeah, that's
called mutually
blackmail.
Assured destruction.
Yeah, mad.
Oh, never heard of that. I need the Clever app for Friday and Saturday because I'm playing for Team Rogers Sportsnet at the Baycrest charity tournament. So we need somebody to come film us and then break it down for us in between our three games, because little old Forfar here is not going to be dangling McDavid this time around, I tell you that.
Here's what I'll tell you. You'll still be the best player by a pretty healthy margin. I don't think that there will need to be much of a scouting report, because it'll be – I can tell you the scouting report going in for everybody. Hey, work out more. Cardio. Like, do some – mix in a run every once in a while, Rogers Sportsnet team. Okay, so, yeah. I think that Chris said a lot of really good things. I'm glad that he highlighted Nylander, because we probably didn't do a good enough job of that. But it's hard to have Nylander takes. Like, you got to give him credit for that. But it's like when Chris said that he believes in the unlocking for the next game, I hope so. Like, I hope so. But he should know. Nylander should know by now how good he can be. And this gets back to, once again, the Tavares take I had from yesterday, which is, I don't put as much pressure on John Tavares to score and create offense as I do William Nylander, because I think William Nylander at this point of his career, when he's on his game, is way better. He's not the same. They do different things. But you saw Nylander create a goal. And who's the only other guy on the team that does what he did? The goal that he scored, only other guy that does that, Matthews, right? The go-ahead? That's the only other player on the team that can do that.
Same with he had a near chance where he drove the net. It was a really aggressive take off the right side, and he didn't score. But that's exactly the Nylander I want all the time, because that's a high danger chance that very few guys on this team can create at the level that Nylander can.
Yeah, it's fun having a mind of thinking through the lens sometimes of other sports. But yeah, that one did remind me of basketball, Blake, where that is a identify the
just
matchup
get to the rim.
Yeah, identify the matchup and get to the rim, and that was Nylander, where it was Cal Foot on the ice, and he went, wait, what are you guys doing out here? And they were like, oh, we're not supposed to be here. we're
trying to change.
I will say that penalty that got called on Bogosian on the Blackwell thing, because, like, Bogosian played, like, no minutes. That's the one thing we didn't talk about with Chris, because we hit on so many things. But he's Mr. Call Everything, and loves the referees. Mm-hmm. We got to stop with this. The hockey's a free-flowing game where it's about changes on the fly, and it's fun. It doesn't have a lot of stoppages in play. When you stop, it sucks. When it's free-flowing and it's end-to-end action, that's when hockey is at its greatest. And if you're going to do the – we always do this for baseball. What's best for the league? We do this for basketball. What's best for the league? Basketball is more of an off-season question where you go like, hey, should we have star players moving teams every year and holding teams hostage? But this is the thing with hockey right now that is going to be the real question is – you are clearly moving to this star-driven league that embraces more skill. But I've said this before. Hockey can't be a skill-alone league. Because if it's a skill-alone league, you're going to watch other sports, right? You're going to watch the NBA.
The All-Star games for.
But you're going to watch the NBA. Like, you have to have the physicality. And if you're calling plays like that Bogosian one on Blackwell, where it's just, hey, it's a big guy who hit a little guy. Like, have you ever seen that called as interference? He just let go of the puck, and he blows up his spot. And you're going, that's just a hockey play. And they call it. And there were moments in that game I thought, good on the refs, because they really did move the whistle throughout the game. It was not a consistent whistle, which is normally what I'm calling for, is call it one way at the beginning, then call it the same way till the end of the game. But by the end of it, it got right. But hockey needs to figure this out. They cannot have another Stanley Cup playoffs where the penalty numbers go up, because they mentioned it during the broadcast how it's, what, 8 years in a row, they said? It can't be a ninth.
Something like that, yeah.
It cannot be a ninth or a
10th. 44 minutes of penalties a game in this series.
Yeah.
219 like, total.
Yeah. I don't want to know who the refs are like in the NBA. You know? Like, I don't want to know who everybody is. I don't want to have this conversation anymore. Inserting the referees more is awful. And I know that they're trying to strike a balance. And I'm not calling for a no-holds-barred the way that – I don't want the Zdeno Chara whistle for everybody. You know? Like, where you're just allowed to trip and pull and grab and punch and do whatever, and the refs go, it's okay, it's just big Z.
But you want to be able to defend with physicality.
Right. I want not every scrum in front of the net to be called. I want a face wash. I want the odd cross check. I want some nastiness in the sport. And, yeah, I call the obvious calls, call the bad calls, but for the love of God, please, never again in the first period of that game.
Matthews was able to play with more physicality. Just a better game, a better way to watch your stars, right? Not just tiptoeing around dangling everybody, but being able to get in there and be a presence more than just offensively. Like, that was way better to watch, and he towed the line quite well.
And again, beyond just the result of this game for us, that third period was one of the best periods of hockey I can ever remember watching. And there were no penalties called in the last 15 minutes of that period. And
shocking.
You know, I don't think this was just a Toronto thing. I saw a lot of people on Twitter during the game talking about how fun the game was, like impartial viewers or people who follow or cover other teams. It was great. That's the best version of hockey, is free-flowing playoff hockey. And yeah, obviously you don't want to go too far with it, but take that 15-16 minutes and just be like, this is what it could look like. This is the best version of your product.
I can't believe how much I've quit Twitter. Like, I'm just not on there looking at all during games anymore. Like, I'm proud of me.
Yeah,
you know,
intermissions really are after the game.
But I don't even think about it the same way anymore. You know, when I do it, is like, honest to God, like, I do it during the breaks of this show to see if there are interactions from people. Like, same with Instagram DMs, those two things where I'll be like, oh, okay, let me check in on these two things. But usually during the games now, I've stopped going through the habit. It's weird. Tweet and drop, baby. Life has changed. Was John Cooper disrespectful last night? Who is this series more about? That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sports at 5, Night of the Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, final block. The best day. The day where you get to break down a great Leafs playoff win. Honestly, that was their best win since they actually won a playoff series. Like, that was the best win since beating the Ottawa Senators. Like, I know that that's a jarring thing to hear, but it absolutely unequivocally was. Like, no doubt about it, 1,000,000,000%, best win they've had since before the NHL lockout. Oof, heavy, but true. And like, embrace who you are, Leaf fans. Like, this is your pain you live, and no shame in enjoying the moment. But yes, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs have to close this sucker out. Okay, so whenever we do this, and it's different when you're a local show, right? Because everything's about you. It's you, 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 you. And then if Tampa Bay had one station or podcast or journalist that even covered that hockey team, they would have their own thing going on too. But they don't, because nobody cares, and it's Tampa, and I've said it's Mickey Mouse. But is this series more about the Leafs or the Lightning to you guys at this point? Because John Cooper seems to absolutely be like us, where we're looking at it through our thing. He had this to say last night.
We're not really making them earn it. We're kind of giving it to them. And, you know, some of the, you know, we take too many men penalties, which momentum killers, one they score on, that's, you know, that's on us. You know, we get a power play there, and then we take a penalty to take ourselves off, and then give up 2-4-4 goals. And, you know, it's been a, you know, special teams, you can consider 4-4 special teams in a sense. And tonight we lost that battle again. You know, some games we're winning it and some games we're not. And tonight I just thought we just too many mistakes. And like, once again, they ended up in the back of our net. And so it's unfortunate because, you know, that game was there for the taking for us. And we let it slip through our fingers. Just, you know, and it's on us. That's basically the most simplified way you can put it.
So John Cooper there sounds a little sleepy, a little tired, perhaps. Certainly not willing to bow to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Okay. I mean, look, he sounded as sleepy as he was saying his players were once they got the lead there.
It's a low energy. Sleepy.
Yeah, it's a low energy quote there. But I think the point is that he's not giving a ton of credit to the Leafs for taking these wins. He's saying it's internal, and I get why you'd want to say that, send that message. But you've lost three games now. You didn't lose three games because there's no team on the other side. There are two teams in this series.
He's consistently not given the Leafs any credit, and I guess that's his thing. You know, he's fully riding that his team hasn't performed to the standard that they have to be back-to-back Stanley Cup champs. But look at last night. The Leafs gave up two goals and then clawed and fought and earned their way to victory. That's on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, they earned that win at the end. So I think sometimes he needs to either change his narrative or he's standing his ground and putting it on his team. But I don't agree with the fact that they're just handing games to Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, I really do think that the Leafs earned that one last night.
So this is your classic case of two things can be true. But the problem is, Ailes, when you said he's consistently not giving the Leafs credit, the way I view that is more, he's already played this card with his group. And that's a little bit troublesome if I'm a Lightning observer. Like, if there was a single Lightning fan on the planet, like a real one who understood sports, they would look at that and say, oh no, that's not a good quote. Because you already did that. You already used the dice move. So now, oh, he's using the dice move more. That's it. You already said, oh, we gave it away. It was about us and not them. You used that after game one. Maybe it works twice. Maybe it works again. But you really have to convince your team, once again, John Cooper, that that was a blown loss, not a Leafs win, because that's I think, is still a little bit up in the air. Like, that's where I say the two things can be true is I'm still not sure who the better team is in this series. I know if Toronto loses now, they've blown it because they're up 3-2, but I'm not sure if last night was more of Tampa Bay blowing it or the Leafs winning it, because, yeah, they had a team on the ropes for half the game, and they didn't put them away. So they took that stupid penalty. They weren't able to close it. They did look rattled at the end of the game. Like, there's reasons to point to Tampa. Of course, Toronto deserves respect. Like, that's an unbelievable win. Anybody with, you know, a functioning brain and two eyeballs knows that. But, yeah, like, he already played that card.
He did already play that card, and it's a strong one to play after you've won two cups. You just go into that room and say, look, we're the champs. We should dictate this series. We dictate the outcome of every game because we're the champs until we're not the champs anymore. That's probably a powerful message, but yeah, it has a shrinking utility, especially when you look at I know he was there talking about special teams, special teams, special teams. Well, in the three games in this series where they've played more than 40 minutes at even strength, the Leafs have won two of those. It hasn't been the Leafs steal the special teams games. It's been actually the ones where there's more five-on-five play where the Leafs have taken their edge in this series. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And maybe that's something you got to watch the film back to truly appreciate and come up with a more tactical response. And this is, you know, post-game coach speak. But, yeah, I don't think that was just Tampa played poorly because the Leafs
– No, it wasn't.
Like, look, if that was just Tampa – what's the explanation for them doing it for the first 10 minutes of the game and not the rest when we've seen that team have the killer instinct before? We've watched them do it in this series where once they get up, they put the Leafs away and there's no question about the game. We've seen them do this in previous series for the last 2 years where they've never even – like, this is kind of new to them. They don't play from behind a lot in series. So
I like that.
I don't think it's right to say, hey, Tampa keeps coughing these up, we keep losing these, because that's not in your DNA.
Yeah, they're a front runner franchise. They're front runners. It's just, it is what it is. They have won when it's been easy, and when not, Columbus. That's all I can say. It's front runner Kucherov. You take on the identities of your best players, and there's no greater front runner in the history of the NHL than Nikita Kucherov. I think, again, it's the two things can be true. In all seriousness, I think the Leafs, that Tampa started, that they made a big mistake, but that the Leafs took advantage of it, right? Simple as that. Mm-hmm. But on balance, who's the better team is like, they're both really damn good teams where at moments they can look at. And that's why credit to the Maple Leafs for getting to where they are in the regular season. Because I will tell you this, I don't think a lot of people are expecting them to win in Tampa. I think a lot of people are going to go in with this take tomorrow of, and we're going to do, as always, our must-win-o-meter. That'll be tomorrow's show thing. But my guess is other people will have the must-win-o-meter be high because they'll be so nervous about a Game 7 and what happens if you're in a Game 7 against them and blah, blah, blah. You can see how the narrative will build. But the way Austin Matthews has looked in the series, home and away, where they've had the ability to have those changes, the way Blake referenced it earlier, like Sheldon Keefe put his second line in more advantageous opportunities in that game than before. That ability to do those things, we've seen have value. We've seen the Toronto Maple Leafs crowd have value now. I think that's two games in this series where you give big-time credit to the crowd. I really do believe, this is nuts, but I very much believe it. I think those soup chants work. Like, I think the soup chants...
Yeah, I was telling you, I was there, and as soon as he... touch the puck, a little bit of confidence, not even shots, just like play handling, like getting a pass up to a D. I do believe that, like, he hears that after being letting in two goals, and it helps inch back to the confidence level that he needed for the rest of the game.
I know some dad on the 401 right now rolled his eyes out of the back of his skull when I said that. I'm just saying it's how I feel. I think that he feeds off that momentum, and I think that Jack Campbell is a guy who needs a pat on the back. We all know that person that needs like reassurance, you know, like needs confidence boosters, and that's Jack Campbell to me. And so when they're at home and they're doing that for him, I think it's working. Like, I really do think that he's a better goaltender at home. I have more confidence in him in that space. I think home ice advantage is big now. Like, I am not, call me the Friday morning after a Leafs loss in Tampa where they get shelled and see where I'm at, because I'm we're all kind of roller coaster riding way through the playoffs. By the way, that's what's so fun about playoffs is you get to be more reactionary. You don't have to be like a baseball fan who goes, it's May, and then we don't get to have 500 plate appearance sample size before we get to have an opinion on anything. You get to ride the motions of playoffs. Don't apologize to people if you have a hot take or you have a bad moment, whatever, that's it. Like, you caring is not a sign of anything bad. It's a sign of being a sports fan. That's awesome. I think if they get back home for a game seven, that I will not be, I don't know how you could be like, remember what before where people would say, oh, well, home ice, you don't want to be in Boston because you're afraid of the ghosts in Boston, but there are other places that you would go on the road and would be better because the Leafs wouldn't have the pressure of the building on their shoulders. I don't feel that way anymore. Like, that actually has been a change for me so far.
I don't know if I'm all the way there yet. I think I still hold on to a little bit of, okay, now we're here again. It's game seven. We had the chance to close it out. We didn't. I still think there's probably a little bit in the back of your mind if you're a player, regardless if you've played better at home and your goaltender's played better at home. I still think there's a little bit of that lingering feeling, which is why I'll probably have my must-win-o-meter a little higher tomorrow, just because, the pressure all mounts back on the Leafs to close this out, which is something that they've struggled with historically in the past. So, yeah, I don't know if I anticipate it being something that bothers them tomorrow night. I really think that that momentum, and I know we've touched on that before, might not carry on game to game. I think the confidence carries on game to game, and whether that's different than momentum, that'll be yet to be seen. But I really hope that they can at least string together a really good three periods. And if they're outworked and outbeat and it's an embarrassing game like it was last time in Tampa, then I'm extremely worried about game seven.
Yeah, and Jack, the Jack at home thing versus Jack on the road, like, Ailish, obviously you deserve all the credit for being a fan at that game and doing the soup.
Yeah, you really did try to take a nice big piece of the credit, honestly. Like, that was kind of a very Blake JD move of you. Normally, Blake and I are usually the ones fighting to give ourselves credit.
I just said that I was there, and I heard it in real life, and I could attest to your point and support your narrative.
And I can support your narrative with some numbers. So Jack in this series has a 914 save percentage at home and 860 on the road. During the regular season, over a much larger sample, 924 at home, 904 on the road. Pretty big swing. Get those soup chants going Saturday if there's a game Saturday. I kind of hope there's not, but get them going if there is.
Yeah.
The other way around, there was a soup chants against him in Tampa where they were like, Campbell.
Yeah, that's everywhere. Didn't love that. I'm surprised that the fans in Tampa learned that over the, like, that's what getting to two Stanley Cup. No, just that they know to do that, like, that they understand how to cheer. Like, again, they don't know the rules. They don't know the rules at all. Like, they're just like, they Googling things. They're looking at Twitter trying to figure out what's going on. They follow the one account of the one journalist that covers the team. They're going, what's happening here? We need the updates. But they know the one chant. They've got one chant down. And good for them, Tampa Bay. Good for you. Two Stanley Cups, and you finally figured out that that's one of the chants you do. Anyway, you're right. I know that the pressure is going to mount up and the narratives, blah, 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 blah. But I will say that today I'm enjoying this. I really am. I'm just enjoying this today. That was a great win. That was a great win. And it involved all of the pieces that everybody's been dying to see win a game like that for forever, right? And I think that it's nice to celebrate those moments. It doesn't mean anything about what they need to accomplish or what the end goal is. It was just, that was a really, really fun game last night. There was a euphoric feeling. Seeing the videos of people out in the street celebrating and seeing, you know, the messages. And again, this is what's so beautiful about sports is that, and the Leafs nailed it with that, the passion that unites us thing, like that, because that's true, right? It's so many people have relationships because of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so many times it's been the texts that are angry that we talked about off the top of the show, or this hour with Christopher Stieg, where it's like, why, who do you hate the most? You know, it's
one of my favorite parts of the series is, yeah, like, my dad's an hour and a half time difference, but we've basically been watching the games together via text, and if the Leafs make the second round, he's gonna be here for it, which is really exciting for me. So I mean, the passion really does unite. It's a fun day to be a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. It's a fun day to be a Toronto Blue Jays fan if you don't have to work, or if you could plug some headphones in, because we've got Blue Jays baseball at 12:30 today on Sportsnet and the Sportsnet Radio Network. We've got Kipper and Bourne coming up 10 to 12 special time today, and that'll roll right into your Blue Jays Yankees coverage. This has been the Fan Morning Show. Win-O-Meter tomorrow morning as we tee up Game 6, the Leafs with a chance to close out the Lightning. That's tomorrow on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.